This is Good Charity, Bad Charity. I'm David Prest.
I'm Camilla McGibbon.
And I'm Keith Davis.
Today we've got a really interesting charity organisation to talk about. The Muslim Charities Forum, founded a few years ago to pull together various Muslim charities. Fadi Itani is its current chief executive. He's becoming quite a high-profile figure in the charity world. It's an intriguing moment, actually, because clearly COVID has focused a lot of attention on Muslim communities around Britain who've been disproportionately affected by the COVID virus. And also, it's almost a bit of a turning point. We've got this aspect of community coming very much to the fore. We've got the Danny Kruger report talking about religions playing a very important part in that. A really interesting time to be talking to somebody like Fadi Itani. Camilla.
It's the first time we've had anybody from a faith charity on the podcast. And for me, I'm interested in what's specific about a Muslim charity. But I'm also interested in if you celebrate Eid, if you celebrate Hanukkah, if you celebrate Diwali or Christmas, the commonality of that, how you embrace your neighbour and what in all of that unites us.
Keith, what's your thinking?
He is a forum, so it was interesting for me to say, OK, how does he add value to the rest of the charities? How does he see himself and his organisation in the wider Muslim charities within the country?
Alex Scales from the Centre for Charity Effectiveness is with us as well. Alex, what are you looking forward to hearing from Fadi?
I'm really interested in hearing the challenges for the leadership of the forum during COVID. We've heard from so many organisations that the pandemic has actually enhanced organisations coming together to coalesce around a particular purpose. And we all know that leading a network is often like herding cats. So it'll be really interesting to hear whether this has happened amongst the organisations' members, or whether perhaps they have all been very much entrenched in their own communities, dealing with the urgent need that is being presented to them during the pandemic.
So our guest today is Fadi Itani, the Chief Executive of the Muslim Charities Forum. Fadi Itani has been the Chief Executive of the Muslim Charities Forum since February 2018. Prior to that, he was the Deputy Director General of Qatar Charity UK and the Global Director for Communications and External Relations at Islamic Relief. Fadi has a wealth of experience in the community and charity sector spanning almost 30 years. But with the Muslim Charities Forum, he's inherited a network of British Muslim charities working for social good in the UK and abroad. Fadi, welcome to the podcast. We're delighted you can join us. The range of the organisations who you have as members, just give us a sense of who they are and what they're doing, if you like.
Okay. The Muslim Charities Forum was formed in 2007, and the objective was really making sure the fast-growing Muslim charity sector is supported, good practices shared, challenges shared. So we basically make sure that as charities collectively, we are effective. Originally, the Muslim Charities Forum was formed to support Muslim INGOs who basically based in the UK operating overseas. But since last year, we basically try to bring on board UK Muslim charities who are focusing on social action. So you will have basically among our members organization who are responding to 30, 40 countries around the world, to disasters, as well as development program, education, health, and so on. And you have here also members who are now responding to food banks, homeless issues, try to support refugees and new arrivals and so on.
And I'm struck by the fact that you said it's one of the fastest growing parts of the charity sector. I mean, why is that?
I think charity and Islam is not something strange to be together, because one of our pillars of the faith is zakat, which is a compulsory charitable contributions. So it is an act of worship through charitable contributions. We have a growing young generation, graduating professionals, who basically also economically they're becoming more empowered better earners than the first generation of the Muslim community. And they are actually more tuned into the current affairs and what's happening both at home and around the world. And they basically feel they should be contributing more towards the needs. And some of them, as you know, the roots of their parents from around the world. And this is making some sort of an obligation on some of the communities to make sure they support back home in the village or the city or the town where their parents or grandparents came from. And this is really leading to quite fast growth of the sector in numbers of charities registered every year and the size of fundraising by the Muslim charities.
Camilla?
Do you think that's a good thing, Fadi? If there are more and more charities looking for more and more money, is there more and more money to be found?
I think this is a very, interesting and challenging question, Camilla. Do we really need more charities because there is more need, or we
exactly.
need more effective charities? And I'm of actually the school of we really need less charities, coordinating, merging. And I have to say that within the Muslim charity sector, this is now an issue we're trying to push. But generally within the big charity sector, it is an issue that we all need to address and make sure that it is really not the numbers of charities, is a specialty, either geographical or the programs.
Yeah. If I ask you to loop that around to government, if you have fewer charities, which maybe have a bigger political pull, does that help you with government? One of the reasons I ask this question now is doing these COVID podcasts, what we have heard from charities is a broad general hostility from government to their charities, while at the same time expecting the charities to pick up a lot of the problems that have emerged.
Yeah. I think, you know, in certain circles, they look at the numbers, unfortunately. You know, they want to see that you have 500 or a few thousand organizations that you actually represent in order for them to engage, which is worrying. Because, for example, when the Muslim Charities Forum was formed, and until really recently, the numbers were basically something like just over a dozen of organizations. But in the term of the financial size of them, is you're talking about £300-400 million. So in a way, the challenge here, Camilla, is we exist because there is a gap as charities. And this gap is part of, unfortunately, the political failure, both at home or overseas, basically. And unfortunately, we start to miss this, that we're not here to replace governments. Part of our work to hold them accountable, and part of our work to make sure we fill the gap and create some sort of a surge when there is a need.
And are governments receiving you with friendly?
I have to say the relationship between the Muslim community and the different government, I mean, British governments, has been really a very rocky, because the activism of the Muslim community has not been appreciated. I'll be honest and say this. It's been looked at, you either loyal and you keep quiet, or basically you are not going to be part of the ecosystem. And this is how actually, this is worrying, because I prefer to have an honest, critical friend than having a friend who actually just will say okay for everything, and actually I will end up in trouble later.
Yes.
And the COVID has actually given us a great example how the sector, the public sector, the government and so on, the private sector should be pulling together to overcome social inequalities and social challenges.
Alex, I know you've been doing a lot of work looking at how organisations have fared during this time. How does it appear to you?
Fadi, now we all know that leading a network is hugely time consuming and energy sapping at the best of times. And I'm really interested to know whether the pandemic has made your role as a leader easier because it's forced many organisations to coalesce around fewer purposes, or whether actually the organisations within the network have gone back to their individual communities and had to react to the urgent need that's being presented.
The pandemic has really posed a test of leadership. For us, for example, we had a small number of organizations who were members, but when the COVID happened, we forced ourselves to make sure we actually go beyond the membership and make sure we support and connect any Muslim responders across the country to make sure they know what's happening.
Excellent.
So in a way, yes, we were not on the ground ourselves as the Muslim Charities Forum, but we were strategically behind the scene, try to capture who's doing what, connect people to resources, to volunteers. And most importantly, we actually try to make sure organizations are building more bridges during this crisis, because you have a lot of mainstream organizations who were responding, they had resources, and they were not connected to certain communities, and the other way around. I keep saying this, and now my colleagues, they keep repeating it every day, that bridges are built from two sides, not from one side.
Yeah, very much
so. And we know that actually from capturing information and data, we have 300 Muslim responding groups across the country just for COVID. And this is amazing.
Keith?
Yeah. I mean, I think that is really good, and I think that's the way forward. If we are looking at charities within an area, and there's some areas, obviously, where the Muslim society is suffering bigger and more problems than elsewhere. If I'm a charity there, how could I look at way we could support our community in the sense of the whole community for that area?
Yeah. This is something we thought that will be strategically important in our intervention to support charities, is locally try to connect them with the rest who are responding in their area. For example, in Nottingham, we had a good relationship nationally with Fair Share. And yeah, we had quite a few Muslim organizations working in Nottingham, for example, who basically were, they had volunteers, capacity and so on, but they actually had a challenge to get enough food to support local families and so on. We managed to actually connect a mainstream charity and a very, very well-respected one like Fair Share with quite a few small groups in Nottingham and other places. And in a way that we created a small partnership locally. And now it's still going on, by the way, for the last seven, 8 months, it's still going on. And the same story happening around the country. To be honest with you, COVID actually made us all equal, unfortunately, in the suffering. Yes, some communities suffered more for different reasons. For example, within the Muslim community, among the issues we discovered, the multi-generational, we call it, housing, especially up north, you will find two, three generation in the same family live together. And this, in a way, is beautiful and there is a blessing in it. But at the same time, it posed a challenge for them when you have the young people going to the mosque, for example, before they closed, and they're coming back with probably the virus without knowing. And passing it to their, you know, parents or their grandparents and so on. So some of those issues actually caused serious devastation in the community. The beauty we've seen is charities responded and came together, and we heard all of us about the beautiful mutual groups across the country who responded without anybody asking them to do so.
Yeah,
I wouldn't normally come out with an anecdote on this thing, but back in the late 80s, my dad was involved in raising some money in his local town, Blackburn, Lancashire, strong Muslim population. And he was challenged to basically raise £1 million to buy an MRI scanner for the local hospital. His first thought was, I'll go and round up all the millionaires I know at the local golf club, get them to put some money in the hat. And he found really, really quickly it didn't work. And then he went to the Muslim communities and suddenly the money started to flow in. I remember him being in tears about it, about going to have breakfasts with these imams and the money flowing in. And in the end, they exceeded it, I think, three times. They raised £3 million.
Wow.
And for me, it's quite a powerful story. Just that sense that it was a community which saw health as being an absolutely intrinsic part of the local community.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not surprised, I'll be honest to you, David. Yeah. During this pandemic thing, we actually produced a short video. It was actually collated by volunteers by contacting the local groups. And I personally, when I saw it, I started crying, you know, because we hear maybe from time to time the power of local communities working together and caring about each other. And sometimes, unfortunately, generally in certain media, we actually told the opposite, that communities, they don't talk to each other, they don't live with each other and so on. And what's happening across the country is proving all this is wrong. Actually, there is a lot of good work there. And we need to celebrate it, not because we want to show off, because from an Islamic perspective and teaching, we're not supposed to give charity and show off. But unfortunately, politically now, we are forced to highlight the good work to make sure we improve community relations, we protect vulnerable communities, and we make sure more bridges are built.
Camilla.
One of the problems I think that has hampered you in the past is, I would imagine, the fact that many funding bodies will not fund faith groups because they see them as only looking after their own. And what you've just been saying is just the opposite.
Yeah.
Do you think that will change, Fadi?
I think it will change. Faith communities in general, as you just mentioned, Camilla, they're struggling to access funding because of this perception. And yep. also, some of them, they have lack of capacity to interact with funders and funders' requirements. And this is something like one of the programs we're doing at the moment, helping small Muslim charities across the country, how to access funding and what the funders look for. And even we produced last week a guide on how to access funds from, you know, trust foundations and charities and so on. The challenge now is it going to be short journey for change, or are we going to see it fast?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Can I ask another question, which is, you know, picking up on the fact that clearly it's part of the faith to give. Do you feel that Muslim philanthropy in this country, that the funders supporting charities are doing enough? I mean, are you looking to grow the size of the donations, as it were, from Muslim giving?
I think the public Muslim giving is good at the moment. I mean, the numbers are good. The strategic investment is still very limited in capacity building, in infrastructure organizations like MCF, for example, and others. And for example, one of the program Cass and Alex, they have is preparing the future leaders for the sector. This is actually a huge investment needed. And I'm talking here about from the Muslim charity sector. We need investment in this to make sure young people go into the sector and they are prepared to make a difference in the long term.
It's also worth noting that it's only in recent years that non-faith-focused grant funders are beginning to realise from pressure that's been, you know, vocalised from the sector that there is this need to give money for infrastructure, for research, for core costs so important, and for capacity building. And we know just from our experience, you know, getting funding to invest in leadership programmes for the leaders of tomorrow is so very difficult. So I think, you know, that is one area where charities from across the sector can come together and keep raising that volume around the importance.
Yeah, I agree. And if I reflect on the individuals in the Muslim charity sector, they were tempted and driven by passion and not by the experience. They joined the sector because they feel they want to make a difference. And for us, we really need to do some initiatives to empower them to make sure they go to the next level, like, as we say, the future leaders, which is like a small program we have ourselves, is taking on board interns who are interested in the sector, and we accommodate them 3 to 6 months to give them really hands-on experience, basically, in the sector, and let them decide if they want to continue in the sector or not.
We probably have to raise, Fadi, from 2014, there was a story by The Telegraph about the charities that you had been working with being linked to extremism. Now, the details of the story are a little bit opaque, but perhaps you could just tell us the background to that story, but also how that has impacted on your work in the last 6 years since.
I mean, I should acknowledge I wasn't during this period in MCF, but I'm not surprised about what happened in a way, because since 9/11, the Muslim charity sector specifically and the Muslim community around the world, they suffered a lot. But specifically the charities, they've been in a way targeted. We have certain media interests sitting on the right, sometimes the far right, and certain think tanks who actually promote this. We now call it in the Muslim community the Islamophobia industry. And they create some of those stories which is fiction. And then it actually recycled. So something happened in the state, then someone re-share it in a blog online in Germany or in Sweden or in the UK. And the same stories keep going around. And this is really the roots of why the Muslim charities have been targeted. And this is where the Muslim Charity Forum, we are not a regulator, but we know our charities, they all registered charities with the Charity Commission. And they were legal entities. And basically is an opportunity to try to link any charitable good work of the Muslim community to some of these negative stories. And then instead of good journalism, sometimes we actually discover is not journalism at all.
And how did that story in 2014, for example, how did that affect your relationship with the British government? Would you say that article still has ripples now?
Yeah, because the intention there, David, wasn't for us just to lose the only grant we got, you know, since we existed from the government, which was a grant to improve the capacity of faith-based charities, not Muslim charities, by the way. So it was basically a coalition of different charities we were supporting, small ones, and the grant came from the DCLG. And this grant, suddenly, we heard about it in the announcement in Parliament, not through a letter that came in advance that this was going to happen. Yeah. What do you have to say about it? Which is quite sad. You know, how can you challenge a minister announcing something in Parliament when his team did not reach out first to say, listen, this is what's going to happen? So it actually affected, and we've been trying to recover from it because the footprints online is actually quite dangerous. And when you go through due diligence, what we call it, databases, it will bring, you know, if you now type David, for example, press, it will actually bring everything about you, what you said in the last 50 years.
There is an irony, though, isn't there, in that we've recently had the Kruger Report, which has suggested that charities with a religious dimension should and could be playing a more important part in building community. Does that give you a bit of optimism?
I think it is acknowledging the great contributions that the faith communities are doing. My concern was we don't need to put more pressure on the faith communities to do more. We need to actually invest some resources for them to do better. Here we're not talking about the Church of England is actually resources rich, cash rich, and space rich. We're talking about communities, you know, black churches, for example, who've got a strategic reserve of volunteers, access to grassroots communities, and know-how of the local communities. They actually require and need support. So it is good to acknowledge the faith communities, but we need to make sure there is a proper plan to support their social action so they can do better.
Yeah.
Alex?
Focusing on the governance arena, and particularly around boards, and board diversity is really important, as we all know, and is a real point of focus at the moment within the sector. How much more difficult do you think it is for faith organisations to achieve diversity of thought around that board table?
I think we are, as faith communities and charities, we are challenged like the rest of the sector to attract diverse, both of skills and background of individuals. We do have a challenge of attracting the right skills within the Muslim charities on the board levels, especially when we already mentioned that the sector is growing quite fast. So an organization who was 5 years ago, 100,000 to 200,000 pounds, now is raising 2 million. The capacity of their governance need to actually go another level in order to manage this kind of growth also.
As we come to a conclusion, Fadi, you know, you talked about the need for strong leadership through times of crisis. And, you know, we're looking on, as it were, on the other side of the pandemic about what sort of society and community we can draw together. Are there any elements of Muslim giving, any lessons from Islam that we can perhaps take and expand out to other people involved in the charity sector?
I don't want to sound like lecturing others about this, but
I'll allow you. We'll allow you just this once, okay?
Yeah.
No, I think we all need to make sure we understand and remember always why we're doing this work. Because sometimes we become like, sorry to use this word, we become like robots. Without really touching or feeling, are we really doing the right work? And are we still relevant as charities? The pandemic has actually posed, you know, on us to think, you know, are we going to continue the same way we're doing things? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to really change the way we're doing things? And we have maybe other priorities now to focus on. Yeah. We talk about diversity, equality, and inclusivity, and so on. But still, people are very comfortable working with the people who they know, not necessarily crossing the bridge to check who else need our work. And finally, let's move away from charity and focus more on solidarity as much as possible.
Good point.
Excellent.
Fadi, it's been a pleasure to hear from you today and to hear about the work of the Muslim Charities Forum. We wish you well.
Thank you so much, all of you, and thank you for
having me.
Thank you.
Bye.
So you've been listening to Fadi Itani, the Chief Executive of the Muslim Charities Forum. How was that for you? Keith?
The strong bit that came out from me is that this commitment of local communities, building the link with those communities to support the whole community that the Muslim charities could get involved with. And this beautiful story about bridges are built from two ends. You know, so simple, but what a lovely message.
Camilla?
I think the difficulty he has really got is he's very committed to the power of the story. He understands as a communicator that that's what he needs to do. But the stories that are being told by other people about the sort of organization that he's involved in are stories that he has to then fight. He's like in perpetual crisis management rather than building the resources for the many communities that he supports and is a network for. So that's one big issue. And then to go back and talk about localism and the way that neighbors are supporting each other cross faiths is heartening, but equally difficult to hear, I think.
And I think the context within which the Muslim charities find themselves operating really accentuates so many of the issues that many, many community and small organisations find themselves grappling with, you know, inability to recruit in sufficiently diverse form to their boards, or perhaps knowledge around completing funding applications to underscore their achievements. But it does seem that for some of those organisations within his networks, the challenge is even harder. I think two positives from me. One is the fact that, you know, he's actively as a leader reached out beyond his network, the members, during COVID to encourage all those organisations who could potentially have joined but didn't to benefit from the support and work that MCF could do. And I think, again, the building the bridges from both sides is just a lovely example of what we've been hearing from so many of the podcasts during COVID.
And I think for me, it was obviously his passion that's coming across. But then saying, you know, what COVID has started for them is the rethink of how we work with passion. And it's not to focus on the same old, same old.
Very interesting as well, that idea that there is in the Quran a call to give, but at the same time, not to be showy with that giving. That's quite powerful, isn't it, really? Because that takes away a lot of the grandstanding of charity philanthropy. And it also says, no, you do have to give. And this is the percentage that we will recommend. I mean, it is an extraordinary sort of ability to embrace charity.
Yeah, and it's enjoined on everyone. So charity isn't something that only the rich engage in, and therefore communities must feel ownership. I built this, whatever it is. That's my brick in the foundation. So it belongs to me. Therefore, I am going to make sure it lasts and I take responsibility.
So our work here is done. You've been listening to Good Charity, Bad Charity. I'm David Prest.
I'm Camilla McGibbon.
I'm Keith Davis.
And I'm Alex Scales.
We'll be back again with another edition quite soon. Our thanks to Dan Hardoon and Whistledown Productions, and we should give a special shout-out because Dan has just been nominated in the Audio Production Awards for 2020 as the Best Factual Producer.
Yeah, we love
it. Let's hope he wins.
Well done, Dan.
If you want to rate and review us, then please do so. And, of course, goodcharitybadcharity.com is the place to get in touch with us if you would like to do so. Our thanks, as ever, to the Centre for Charity Effectiveness and to the City Bridge Trust. Till the next time, goodbye.